Our community engagement team hosts a series of events, particularly under the banner of Bridging Blocks. And this is an opportunity for all of you to connect with your neighbors and your community members. And so before I ramble on too much longer, we want to get the program started. I'm going to introduce my colleague, Brisa Luis Castro, who is our Community Conversations convener. And then she will make the introductions to Sarah Glover.
Hi, everyone. I am Brisa Luzi Castro, and I'm the community convener here at WHYY News, specifically the News Community and Engagement Team. So it is a pleasure to be with all of you tonight. We have a series of panelists this evening that I will be introducing shortly. But first, I will introduce Sarah Glover, who is the VP of News here at WHYY.
Thank you, Brisa, and good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us here at WHYY tonight. Just to amplify what Eric shared, this business card exchange is produced by our community engagement team inside the newsroom. It's a very unique team. Most newsrooms in America have a community team, but that usually is comprised of journalists reporting on specific communities. At WHYY News, we actually have community members and community activists in our newsroom reporting up to me, and not on the outside, but they are able to influence the sources that we identify and include in our stories. They're able to help us with these community activities and convenings. And really, we take this model very seriously. WHYY has been leading in civic dialogue for decades, right? Now, local news is a buzzy thing. Everybody does local news, right? Well, WHYY uniquely has been doing local news for decades. This year, we celebrate 70 years of WHYY, generally speaking, as an audio and radio platform, and obviously over the years has expanded to become other things. We have an amazing, enriching education department. We are teaching media production in about 50 schools across the city of Philadelphia. There's so much to learn about WHYY, all the great things that we're doing. But back to the community team and why you're here tonight. In addition to Bridging Blocks, there's also a program we call NICE. And it's News and Information Community Exchange. And it's a program we're working with about two handfuls or so of community media makers. And a part of our mission and motto is to more or less each one teach one, to lift up other media makers, other small news publications in the city as individuals and or as small publishers, and really bring them into the newsroom fold more intentionally. So those members of that program, the NICE program, if you could raise your hands, I know if there are a few people here tonight. And our community engagement team is made up of not only Eric Marsh, one of our managers, but Tony Cuffey is a name that you'll come to know. He's another manager on the team. Rashawn Stanley, who's in the back of the room, who coordinated and was the idea behind this wonderful evening. And Brisa is a new member of the team as well as a community convener. So I really took that breath to say there's some amazing things happening here at WHYY. This is our sixth civic dialogue event this month. We're going to continue to amplify space and place for you all in the community to engage, not just with WHYY, but to really give us feedback. You know, we have a responsibility as media organization, as a newsroom. Really, quite frankly, it's our role to tell the truth and hold the people to account. And we need your help in being a part of serving you as the audience. And news and information at WHYY is free. Certainly there are other news sources, but we rank high as a trusted news source in the region, and that's because we're here to serve you. We're here to produce events like the one tonight. So we look forward to your ongoing feedback, and thank you for coming. Next, I'd like to introduce one of the members of our newsroom team, who I think will pick up the ball from here, and that is Kristen Mossbrooker Garza. She joined our newsroom within the past 2 years, and she's our business reporter, and she also contributes to the work of our vertical called Plan Philly. So you'll have to learn a little bit more about Kristen tonight, but you'll have to follow up and read her work. So just Google her, Kristen Mossbrooker Garza, and she's gonna take us through this exciting night. So thank you all again for coming. All right.
So we have Rachel Branson, and that is who we will start off with for our bios. Rachel Branson is a professional with over 17 years of experience in various legal and business roles, demonstrating a commitment to strategic collaboration and operational efficiency. As the inaugural director of the Office of Minority Business Success in the Parker Administration, Rachel leads the effort to foster the advancement of minority-owned businesses in Philadelphia's entrepreneurial ecosystem. Through advocacy and strategic engagement, MBS serves as a champion for the interests of minority-led small and local businesses, streamlining procedures, and identifying public and private opportunities and resources. So that's Rachel Branson. Next, we have Val Gay. And she is the Chief Cultural Officer for the City of Philadelphia and Executive Director of Creative Philadelphia, appointed by Mayor Sherelle Parker in 2024. A creative and certified financial planner, Val has 20 years of leadership experience across arts, education, and finance, including roles at the Barnes Foundation and Art Sanctuary. A serial entrepreneur, she leads organizations focused on improving lives, including an arts nonprofit and business consulting firm. Val holds multiple degrees, including an honorary doctorate from St. Joseph's University, and serves on various nonprofit boards in Philadelphia and New York. We have Gregory Davis, who is the founder and president of Vertex Financial Advisors, LLC, specializing in investment management, retirement planning, and financial planning. He focuses on educating clients about finance and risk management. Gregory is actively involved in community service, including roles as founder of Project Reachback and former board member of organizations like Ceasefire PA and the AIDS Law Project. He also served on the DNC National Finance Committee during President Obama's administration. Gregory holds a BS in Commerce and Engineering and an MBA in Finance from Drexel University and is a licensed investment advisor and insurance agent. We have Lonnie Johnson with us today. As a business librarian for the Free Library of Philadelphia in the Business Resource and Innovation Center, they help patrons with their business plans and business plan research, specifically the industry, market, and competitive analysis aspects of the plan. They meet patrons either one-on-one or via Zoom. Their wide variety of programming on business-related topics, from how to start a business to business taxes and books, round out what they offer to the public. And lastly, our wonderful moderator, Kristen Mossberger-Garza, is a WHYY News business reporter. Most recently, she worked as a digital editor for WYPR, the public media station in Baltimore. She previously covered the business beat for the American City Business Journals in San Antonio and the McAllen Monitor in Texas. She also worked as an editor in Arizona and reporter in Louisiana. Mossberger-Garza is a Western Pennsylvania native and a graduate of Temple University. She got her start in news as a contributor from WHYY NewsWorks more than a decade ago. And now Kristen will lead and moderate the panel.
All right. Thank you, fabulous engineers and the engineering room, for making us sound amazing. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming. We are inundated with options and choices about our attention, and so it's just so humbling that you chose to be here. So thank you. So we wouldn't be public media, we wouldn't be radio if we didn't have a moment to close our eyes and take a deep breath. And imagine you're listening to WHYY in Philadelphia, 90.9 FM. It's probably around 6 o'clock in the evening, and you won't see any sun, but I hear it's gonna be a beautiful night. So, thanks for indulging me. But here's three things that you need to know about me. I love motorcycles, but it's not for the speed. It's for the adventure. I am a business news reporter, and I firmly believe that people like to learn about people and that people run businesses. So I don't write about companies, I write about the people who make them happen. And if you share your story with me, I promise to you that I will do it justice. So thank you so much. Awesome. So we have one fun fact. In Philadelphia County, and this is U.S. Census data, between 2022 and 2023, there was about a 5% increase in new business applications. So that means new businesses are starting. So about 30,800 here in Philadelphia County, which is our city limits. So a little fun fact. So thank you so much, y'all. I feel like I'm like a walker instead of a sitter, so if you'll indulge me there, I appreciate it. I'll try not to block you. My first question is for my good friend Lonnie over here. We had a delightful conversation earlier today, so thank you so much for that. When you're not helping nonprofits and entrepreneurs at the City of Philadelphia's Free Library, what's one hobby that you enjoy outside of work?
My main hobby outside of work is art. I'm an artist at heart, and I've been doing that since high school. So I just rediscovered it and fell in love with it. So that's what I do.
Cool. And where might we see one of your pieces?
The city right now is working with the National Arts Program, and I took two pieces over there
yesterday.
I
thought you looked familiar.
Yes, yesterday I was over there. And I dropped those two pieces off to be a part of that. You can see that December 12th is going to be the reception and the show for that.
Very cool. Exciting. I'll have to pop by. Thank you for sharing. So, Rachel Branson, what's one thing that you like to do when you're not leading the city's Office of Minority Business Success?
I will say eat and drink.
Okay. Do you have a favorite restaurant inside City Limits?
I figured there was a follow-up question, and that I wasn't prepared for. I will say... Recently, I'll say Vista Peru. That's a local restaurant nearby. It's very delicious.
Giving me all the good ideas. I'm so glad I asked this question. So Gregory, when you're not helping business owners with their financial planning, what's one non-work-related hobby that you enjoy?
You can't use mine.
Yeah, I was about to say the same answer with Rachel. That's pretty much what I do. But there was an activity that I was engaged in. I don't really do it anymore. I did call it a hobby. And I was known throughout the city, not just the city, but also the region, as being one of the top political fundraisers in the region. So I worked on
it. You did it as a hobby?
It was fun. I wasn't getting paid for it, therefore, a hobby. So I worked on Mayor Nutter's initial finance committee. I was a member of the DNC National Finance Committee. And worked on various other campaigns for mayor, governor, senators. I don't do it anymore.
Okay, well now we know what financial planners do for fun. So we have Val Gay. What's one thing that people should know about you?
Oh, well, I don't know if you should know it. I was toggling between two things. So initially when Kristen asked me this story, I was like, oh, well, almost all the things that I do is related to the arts. And I have a podcast, so I'll put that. But I think it's more fun to say that I am an organist. I'm a professional musician, but I'm also an organist, like a church organist. So then Kristen said, so if we put you in front of the Macy's organ, would you be able to play it? And the answer is yes, but in a constipated kind of way. It would go like, hold on. Right? So yeah.
Yeah, just because the Macy's organ is quite large.
It's huge.
Right?
It's like one of the largest in the world, I think, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Sure.
All right. So now on to real questions. So for folks who may not be very familiar, and this is for Lonnie, why should business owners and nonprofits alike visit the library for high quality information and not just Google it, not just ask Siri, not just rely on social media only for their information?
Well, that's a big question, but please, please come to the library if you can. The library's resources are people-centered. So if you Google something, you may or may not find it. A person will give you a direct answer, and we work with one-on-one with people and give them direct answers. If we don't know the answer, we will refer them to someone who does. So that's one of the main reasons to come. But we have so much at the library. I don't know if anybody's been there, but it's four stories. We have the Brick Center, which is a business resource and information center down at the bottom. We have meeting rooms. We have Wi-Fi. We have databases filled with marketing and information. Nonprofit organizations will benefit not only from the e-resources. We still have the same old books that you would find in a library, but our resources are extensive. So please come and ask us. We will be glad to help you.
Lonnie, aren't they new? Your resources, a lot of your facility is new.
Yes, Brick, I believe, was started in 2019. So.
Yeah.
But it's redesigned.
You know, and we kind of had this pre-conversation a little bit because, you know, we're not saying there's anything wrong with the internet, right? Like, I'm an early adopter of the internet, self-described. Taught myself computer programming a long time ago. But something that I've noticed, particularly with small business owners, particularly with entrepreneurs, is that sometimes, very often, a lot of times, the information you get on the internet is being marketed to you, right? Which is a little different than a resource librarian or a reference guide. The internet has changed a lot, and so props to the free library. So we'll go on to Rachel Branson. I have a quick question for you. Why should business owners connect with the Commerce Department sooner rather than later, and certainly before they have to?
So the Commerce Department, one of the...
I want to bring it up a little.
Bring it up.
Is it on?
Yeah, because you're covering
it. Okay, I think it wasn't on.
Oh. Yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
That's okay. We got you.
So I am the Office of Minority Business Success, but I work very closely with the Commerce Department. We are building, it's a new office in the Parker administration. So in the first, you know, as part of building the office, we spend a lot of time talking to entrepreneurs and people we consider our stakeholders, which are the diverse chambers of commerce and other business support organizations in our work. One of the common things is that people aren't aware of all of the resources that are available to entrepreneurs in the Commerce Department. And so this is part of the reason why I say you should go there first. So there's a range of, there's grants, there's workforce credits. So if you're hiring employees from that are Philadelphia residents, there's credits for that. And so just as you're thinking about building out your business, there is multiple ways of attacking that. And the Commerce Department can help you with through licensing. They can usher you through that, like access to capital. There's one resource there help a business owner calculate the actual cost of the product that they were selling so that they could charge more for it. So there's just a variety of resources there, and they have a very huge budget. So they're, you know, and people don't realize, as I was sharing with you earlier, that because commerce distributes money through PIDC, often people aren't aware that the money is actually coming from the Commerce Department. And so the resources are in commerce. The money is someplace else, but those funds, because commerce is also funding a lot of the organizations that you know and love, like the African American Chamber of Commerce or the Economy League. So the commerce's resources and funds are distributed throughout the city to organizations that you probably work very closely with.
And before you say, I just want to say the library works closely with Commerce and PIDC, and we have programs that with both of them as well. So we're connected.
Very cool. Thank you so much. Gregory, when you work with small business owners or large business owners, when they're trying to kind of shore up their finances before they apply for capital, what are some things that they usually forget about and what should they remember so that they're most successful in their application?
Well, honestly, I primarily deal with individuals who are looking to prepare for retirement. I also deal with nonprofits as far as their qualified retirement plans and some church groups, but I do talk to business owners as well. Some of my clients actually are business owners, and so they do come to me for advice and guidance. In this particular field, financial services, financial consulting, people just make the assumption that if you have this kind of educational background and professional background like I have, I know everything about finance and insurance and taxes, and I don't. So my expertise is in investment advising, financial planning, and retirement planning. Now, there are some key principles that can be used for the business owner who's looking for guidance as far as starting a business, growing a business, being successful at a business. And the two key components that every business owner should be really focused on. Number one is have a plan. You can't just decide you wake up in the morning after a good dream and say, look, I want to open a business up. I can almost guarantee you will fail. But if you have a plan of attack, a strategy to actually achieve your goal, you really improve the odds of success. Now, there's a particular component of that plan that you must include. And most consultants, most advisors, most business owners don't include this piece. It's a risk management component. Because it's easy to plan for success. Anyone can do that. I have a plan. Here's how I'm going to be successful. I'm going to make all this money. I'm going to build a business that I can lead to my children, my grandchildren, the whole thing. But if you don't consider the fact that some things could go wrong along the way, again, you're enhancing the probability of failure. So you have to have a risk management piece in there. Consider all the risk factors that could cause your business to derail, and then have a solution to address those risks. It could be a risk of loss due to your disability or health issue or property loss, whatever it might be. You need to identify it and then come up with a solution to address it. So that's number one. Number two, instead of looking for grants and going to the bank and getting turned down for a loan, try waiting to start your business and bootstrap your business and use your own capital. That's how I started Vertex Financial Advisors. It was sort of something I had developed years ago, but it was a side practice. I didn't become serious and real about this business until April of 2019. And the capital, where did it come from? I didn't go to a bank. I didn't go to a venture capitalist. Keep it really simple and honest. I divorced my ex-wife, and the house was forced to be sold. And so the courts in their infinite wisdom, despite the fact I don't want to get too much into this personal stuff. But anyway, I'm getting it off my chest.
Go ahead. Tell us some more.
So I had custody of the two children. I raised the two children in this house. And the courts forced me to sell the house after the children were grown. That's fine. Which is okay. But they gave the bulk of the proceeds to her. Now, that was the point I'm trying to get to. The little bit they left me with is what I used to finance the bootstrap Vertex Financial Advisors. So I did not have to go to a bank, did not have to dilute my capital by bringing in another investor. It's 100% owned by me. So here's where you could use an actual financial planner. Everyone can do better with their finances. People are all the time telling me, well, I just don't have the money. I can't save. Yes, you can. Look at all your expenses, and there are ways to reduce your expenses and allocate those savings into a savings account that you can use to bootstrap finance your business. So those are the two pieces I would recommend.
Thank you. Yes, and jump in.
So one of the things that we are learning is that often for black and brown businesses, we are getting loans too early in the life cycle of our business. Mm. And so we're put on, as Della Clark would call, the hamster wheel of debt. Yeah. And so we're spending so much of our effort and energy in trying to repay the loan, and so which requires us to work in our business that we can't work on our business. So bootstrapping and crowdfunding resources to start a business is absolutely the best way, and try to prolong getting loans for as long as possible. The other great thing about crowdsourcing is, or you know, bootstrapping, is depending on your good. If you're selling goods and services, you're giving yourself an opportunity to test the market. And to build a client base, right? And so I just wanted to double click on what Greg said, because I think that is important for entrepreneurs to know. Try to put off the loans for as long as possible. This is why grants are great opportunities to get that free, you know, working capital are also awesome.
And can I double click on this also on the other side? As also, I am still a certified financial planner. And so to your point about saving, and it is hard, so it's like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough. But you could actually think about your budget, if you will, differently than you perhaps think about it. The way most people think about it, it's like, you know, I'm going to pay all my bills and then I'll put whatever I have left, I'll put aside. But usually there's more money than month left. More month than money left if you do it that way. But if you have a plan and say, I'm going to pay myself first, whatever that percentage is, and you could start with 2%. I'm going to pay myself 2% of my salary, whether it's biweekly or monthly or weekly, and I'm going to put it in my company account that I'm saving to start my company or to work on my company. It becomes a little easier then. And that's the same thing that we do when we're doing our expenses for saving for a rainy day. Like, those are opportunities for us to do it. And it is difficult in the beginning, but it becomes a habit. And then you find that you actually have more than you thought you had.
No, that's amazing.
I just want to.
Of course, jump in.
I'm
wallpaper. It's fine.
Simple turn.
Triple click. So the number one question that we get, that people who come, how do I finance my business? It's the number one question. How do I get money to start this thing? And I say the same thing. Bootstrap, friends and family, crowdfunding, no loans. Right. Not right away.
You know, I love that you brought up, Gregory, risk management. You know, I've covered a lot of things over the years, including the financial industry, and I think a lot of people are like, well, risk management is only for insurance companies, and insurance companies are boring, and I'm not boring, so why do I care about risk management, right? But actually, mitigating your risk is extremely important. And, you know, I'm not a business owner. I've never been a business owner, but I ride motorcycles. And if you know anything about business and you know anything about motorcycles, those are inherently risky activities. And so, you know, you mitigate your risk as you motorcycle or try to grow your business, right? You think about, okay, is there going to be a pothole here? What's my route going to be? All those kind of things. So I think, Val, you were...
A pandemic?
Yeah.
Wearing a helmet?
Yeah. The pandemic.
No, I had one person tell me, no, I'm going to be successful. This is going to work out. This is just going to work. It's got to work. Okay. You might want to think about that a little bit more. It's going to work.
Well, I mean, it's important to be confident, right? You sort of have to be confident in your own skills. But, you know, someone who worked for the Small Business Administration told me one time, you know, Kristen, I get a lot of women who are business owners who are actually mothers. And they come in and they say, you know, I've raised my children. I'm interested in starting a business. But I was just a housemaker. I was just a mother. And this SBA administrator told me, you know, Kristen, that's really not accurate, because if you were a mother, you ran a household. You had children who are very much like employees, depending on how you run your household. My mother had 8 children, and so I was an employee pretty early. I think her point was that some of the most successful business owners are women who have raised children, who have run households, because they understand that risk mitigation aspect that we were kind of talking about, and they understand what it means to survive and what to, you know, how to make food stretch. You know, if you got $100 and you got 5 kids, you got to make it work one way or the other.
And
right?
Multitasking, right?
You're, yes,
you're doing
and
5
multitasking
things all at the same time, right?
And so a lot of those new business formations that I was talking about, you know, the White House calls me all the time and they're like, oh, write about all these new businesses that are starting, particularly black and brown owned businesses that are starting. And a lot of them are women. And I think that might be a big part of it. But anyway, so Val, I wanted to ask you about the creator economy. You know, creators are very much a growing part of our global economy, much more than ever. How can the city foster those small businesses and entrepreneurs who often have different needs, desires, and wants than something like a brick and mortar bakery or a corner store?
Sure. So first of all, I want to call out the graphs that are not up here, but they're on the sides to show that it's either 45 or 50% of the audience is identifying as creators, right, as a part of their business. And so, right, yeah, let's just clap it up for them. Yay, my people. And that's really great. So we see it here, right? We see that this is a growing part of our economic landscape. And from the city's perspective, we talked about the Commerce Department. Similarly, it's not too dissimilar from what you were saying, Greg, about, you know, when you're creating a plan. I believe that every person should take some kind of class in, especially if you went to college, to take some kind of class in like entrepreneurship or business so that you have these understandings. Because in any business, right, there are some fundamental things, foundational things that everybody needs to know, right? And then you put on top of it your content specialty. So if your content specialty is filmmaking or graphic design or you know, choose your creative endeavor, you still have to have, you know, your finances in order. You still have to have your planning. You still have to have your certifications and your permits. And so there are certain things that we all need to have. And I just found out yesterday, we had a summit yesterday, and our colleague Alba Martinez was on the panel, and she really spoke very eloquently about the creator entrepreneur segment. And one of the things that the Commerce Department is rolling out, and maybe in partnership with the library, is free entrepreneurship boot camps for everybody, but particularly for creators. And that is really exciting because, and her mindset is, like, we could think about this, like, we should charge everybody. That could be one thing. Or we could make it free and available to as many people who want to do it to increase their capacity. Once they increase their capacity, then they're better able to make money and have a viable business. And guess what happens when you have a better, more viable business? You pay taxes. So it's just for us. It works well for the city. So it's mutually beneficial, right? But that is something else. And so Rachel was talking about, and you'll probably hear it a couple more times, literally go on the Commerce Department's website. There are so many things that are there. And some of these things are being rolled out so you can get on their newsletter list and find out and be the first to find out about programs, about, you know, opportunities, about trainings. I'm going to say something that's going to embarrass me in front of my colleague Rachel, but I'm going to say it nonetheless. How many people know about MedWeek here? So yes, a lot of you know about MedWeek. Okay, I am a serial entrepreneur. I was this year old when I found out that MedWeek is what MedWeek is. I thought it was for doctors. And so all these years, I thought it was for doctors. And it was actually in a cabinet meeting, and Rachel was talking about it. And I remember Googling, like very quietly Googling, I was like, what the? And so definitely get on the Commerce Department website. There are so many amazing opportunities that are out there that if you don't know, you may think that nothing's happening.
Thank you. One more quick question for Greg. As I can imagine, you work with a lot of folks who are interested in passing along generational wealth. That's something I hear from a lot of small business owners. What are some things that people maybe make mistakes about that hurt their chances of being able to pass their business down to another generation?
I would suggest probably at least two major issues. One would be, I've seen of these businesses have done a lousy job of training their heirs, their children, grandchildren.
You want to hold this here. You're covering up your receiver.
They've done a lousy job of really preparing their heirs to take over the business. And I can't blame it completely on the owners, because in some cases the children just don't want to get into the business. There are successful businesses that are out there. They're not necessarily professional services. It could be a plumbing business. It could be electrical services business. It could be a successful restaurant. And a lot of times these businesses close because no one's interested in taking it over. So that's one thing. The other problem is the lack of estate planning. That means having, at the very least, a will, so that if you do pass before you have the next generation prepared to take over the business, at least if you have life insurance, there will be funding available for them to continue the business. Even if there's, let's say you bring in a partner, but you want your children to take over the business, if you have life insurance payable to as beneficiary to your children, they have the ability to buy out your partner and continue keeping that business within the family. So those are a couple of key methodologies that you can use to make sure that you generate generational wealth. But again, it comes down to what I talked about a few minutes ago, planning. You have to plan. That's number one.
Cool. And so this is a popcorn for anyone who wants to take it. I think this is my last question. Then they're going to kick me off stage. So thank you, everyone, very much. I appreciate it. What's one indicator, like an economic indicator, that might share the pulse of our local small business community that y'all have noticed just as a life experience as you interact with people?
Well, I think what you talked about, right, the fact that so many businesses, so in the, would you say 2022 to 2023, 5% new small businesses, and certainly that number was larger 4 years ago, right, when the pandemic shut us a lot of us in, and folks were realizing that their hobbies, they could make money off of them, right? And so I think, but and at the same time, we see people fail quickly, or the businesses go out of business because they don't have the undergirding of it. And so I think that as we see, it'll be interesting to watch as the economy shifts over the next few months, as we start to settle in on what this new environment will be. Will it change? Will it be better? Will it be worse? We'll start to see and see how we can track to that. And then I would say, based on the information that even just has been given here tonight, everyone in this room has a leg up, because you have the opportunity to access for free information and resources. Like, who knew that there were grants for your business out there in the city of Philadelphia that you could apply for, really by hand? a few of you. Like I would say that was under a third, right? And so there are opportunities that we can ensure ourselves, better ensure ourselves, almost like risk management for our lives and for our businesses, that regardless of what happens in the economic ups and downs, that we have kind of mitigated some of the risks. When I was an investment manager, we used to use options as a way of doing that and hedging some of, and diversification to hedge some of those risks, right? So that means that you don't put all your money in one thing. It may be a great thing, right? But what happens if something happens to it, you lose all your money, right? And what are some ways that you can mitigate that so no matter what, you stay afloat?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a really important point. And, you know, I was out there on election day talking to voters, and the number one thing that people told me was, they voted because of the economy. And I think that people who, you know, are professionals in journalism sometimes forget there's a difference between a personal economy and the economy, right? The overarching, right? And when you ask people about their personal economy, I've heard from business people, just people on the street, voters, that their personal economy has not been the best. We may have top line, very good economic indicators, low unemployment, high GDP, the stock market's doing great, thanks for buybacks, you know, different tax structures, but people voted about their personal economy, and their personal economy might be in a recession, even though we are technically not. So.
And what I see in the library, people coming to us, I see more and more people wanting to start their own business, even if it's just a side hustle. You know, I'm working my main business, but I'm trying to do this on the side. And I see that more and more. So, yeah, that would be the main trend that's going on.
I would also suggest a metric that you would look at would be the unemployment rate. Yeah. Now, one of the things that if President-elect Trump is telling the truth about what he's going to try to implement when he comes into office by bringing in Elon Musk and the other guy to reduce the federal government as far as the size of the federal government, what that's going to lead to, if they implement this strategy, a lot of well-paid professionals who work for the federal government will lose their jobs. And so if that happens, they're going to have some resources. And most of these people are not going to be eligible to retire yet. But they're at that age where it's going to be difficult for them to get a job paying them the same type of salary. So there will be an incentive for them to take those resources and start a business. So that's a metric I would look at, would be the federal government employment level.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much, panel, for sharing your wisdom and expertise. You've been fabulous. And I'll relinquish my control here. Thank you.